This is The Film Effect with Tiff.
Dickie Greenleaf?
Who's that?
It's Tom. Tom Ripley.
Tom Ripley?
We were at Princeton together.
Okay. Did we know each other?
Hello. Well, I knew you, so I suppose you must have known me.
Princeton's like a fog. America's like a fog. This is Marge Sherwood. Tom, sorry, what is it?
Ripley.
How do you do?
How do you do, Marge?
What are you doing in Manji?
Nothing. Nothing much. It's passing through.
Passing through?
Yeah.
You're so white. Did you ever see a guy so white, Marge? Gray, actually.
It's just an undercoat.
Say again?
You know, a primer.
That's fun. Margie likes that because she's so white.
Yes, I do, and you're not funny. Well, you should come and have lunch with us before you go. Yes, Dickie?
Sure, anytime.
Well, coincidence.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Film Effect with Tiff, and we are back. I am back with another episode from far away. That's right, everybody. I have, because of the quarantine, because we're all stuck in the quarantine this week, last week, the week before. I don't know where your quarantine started for you, but mine started like basically just about a week ago. And I think we're going to be in it for at least, oh my God, I don't even want to say like 2 months. But what I'm doing in the meantime, since I can't have people face to face in front of me, is I've been reaching out to people that I know and I've been asking them to be guests remotely on the podcast. So today I have an amazing, awesome, super cool, super unique, original friend, really good friend that I have from California from when I went to grad school out there. And her name is Saja. Saja, say hello.
Hello, everybody. What's up, Tiffers?
Hey, I'm so glad you're here. This is so awesome. And so I called you up and I was like, hey, will you be willing to like talk to me and talk about a movie that you love? And you suggested
The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yes. So, Saj, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself if you want to do a little plug?
Right on. Well, first of all, as you just mentioned to all you podcasters out there, I live in Tinseltown, Hollywood, where all the glitz and glamour, whatever, is. I work in production. I also teach production at Chapman University, where coincidentally, Tiffany and I went to grad school. And I have a cooking show that I'm passionate about that I've got on YouTube. I'm a movie buff galore. I'm a foodie by far. And anything, everything cinema and how it affects us and the mosaic of my background, which is Hollywood and production and movies, is something I'm fascinated with and love to just chew the fat on. So here we are.
Absolutely. It's my favorite thing. Yeah. And we could like probably go into like a long conversation about the days of film school and all the shenanigans, but we might have to save that. But, you know, but for everyone listening, this is somebody that I did go to film school with. She knows a lot about movies and film. And we have, you know, we definitely saw some movies and experienced a lot during that time when we were in school together. So it was an amazing time, and I'm really glad that I got to do that. So, but The Talented Mr. Ripley. So why don't you, you know, you were actually, before we started, you read this really awesome description of the film. Can you do that for me again, Saj?
Sure, absolutely. So here we go. Talented Mr. Ripley. To be young and carefree amid the blue waters and idyllic landscape of sun-drenched Italy in the late 1950s, that is La Dolce Vita. Tom Ripley, who's played by awesome Matt Damon, craves. Dickie Greenleaf, played by Jude Law, this is the life he leads. When Dickie's father asks Tom to bring his errant playboy son back home to America, Dickie and his beautiful expatriate girlfriend, Marge Sherwood, played by Gwyneth Paltrow, never suspect the dangerous extremes to which Ripley will go to make their lifestyle his own. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, man. Well, this movie is awesome. It is like way more. You know what's weird is you'd mentioned it as your pick, and I was kind of like, and I know you have another pick too, and we might have to, you know, if you have time and you want to come back, we can talk about that one as well. She also suggested Under the Tuscan Sun, which I haven't seen, but I think I definitely saw this movie way back in the day, but I didn't really remember it very well. And I was kind of psyched to sit down and take another look at it. So I'll add a little more info into what you just said. That description you gave is so much better than what they have on IMDb. It's just a better overall description. But the movie was made in 1999. It's categorized as a crime drama thriller. And it is, like you said, it stars Matt Damon, Gwyneth Paltrow, Jude Law. Cate Blanchett has a great appearance in this. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yay!
There's so many great people. I know.
I loved him in this. He rocked. And, every time I saw him, I mean, he's just captivating as an actor. May he rest. And every time I see any Philip Seymour Hoffman flicks, I'm just moved by his performance.
So true. And he is like always so authentic. Like he's just so real to me every time he plays anyone that he plays.
He becomes
and this is directed
character.
By John Dahl.
No, it's directed by Anthony Mangella.
Yeah, and John Dahl.
No, it's directed by Anthony Mangella.
Wait a minute. Why does it say that? Thank you. See, this is why I need you here. I'm reading the wrong thing. Oh, you know what? I scrolled down and I was looking at... I'm sorry. I was looking at Rounders, which is a total different movie with Matt
Damon.
Totally different Anthony Mangella. Now, is he directed other films that I might know? Let me just see.
I think he directed what was that movie with Renee Zellweger and Nicole Kidman? She won an Oscar for it.
Yeah, Cold Mountain. And
that's
dude,
it.
English
and
Patient. What is wrong with me?
Yeah, the guy.
Well, that's writer. He's writer.
But he's an exceptional director. Exceptional. I mean, may he rest because he sadly is no longer with us in the physical form. But such a talented writer/director and even producer. And speaking of producer, because, you know, I'm all about that, Sydney Pollack did a fantastic job putting this show together. This is produced Talented Mr. Ripley.
Oh, yeah. So this is amazing. And you're right. Actually, it looks like he did direct Cold Mountain and The English Patient.
Yep.
And a bunch of other movies. And he also, it looks like he got the writing credit on those too. So he's awesome. So why don't you tell me real quick, like, because I asked you to pick a film, what was it about this movie just initially that made you want to talk about it or even like return to it?
So in the times that we're faced with now, and of course me living in Los Angeles and in particular at Hollywood, I'm always seeing people that are always striving to have a life that's not their own. And it made me wonder what is wrong with people that they would rather live a fake, glorious life than an authentic, real, perhaps even boring life. And this movie transcends into the epitome of what that means, where people are not content staying true to who they really are, independent or individual, really. And the characters, in particular to the Matt Damon character, who's Tom Ripley, you see him struggle. And I guess maybe even I've struggled with that. Being in the entertainment industry, it can really eat at you and make you question who you are and what's really good about your life. And sometimes I found myself struggling to appreciate whatever little or large my successes or my endeavors were. And I hate to say this because he's such a creepy character because he's a murderer, but I resonated with him in such a way that I almost felt sorry for him. And although it was uncomfortable for me to watch as his psyche just accelerated into this just destructive and really psycho killer path, that I had a hard time accepting that this gorgeous young man in the midst of the 50s in this absolute beautiful backdrop of Italy, which, by the way, is one of my favorite parts of this film, is the backdrop. And how coincidental that you mentioned that I picked Under the Tuscan Sun, which is also a film shot in Italy. I don't know. Maybe there's something there for me. About
I know.
That,
I
right? Because you're Italian, and I'm thinking there's got to be something there for me. Why did I pick two films that have particular... you know, there's something that takes me back to Italy. I think in another life I was either Italian or I had to go and be there. But back to Talented Mr. Ripley, there's a strong sense of relation to people here that don't want to have the life they have, and they covet other lives. And even though you look at the Jude Law character, this very bougie, gorgeous, somewhat spoiled playboy brat of this, you know, very wealthy man in America, and he's just galloping all around Italy, spending his dad's money, and you think, man, I want that life, right? But when you look at his character, he's kind of an asshole. He's not really happy. He's not true to his girlfriend. Yeah. And although he's gorgeous and he plays the sax and he lives this idyllic life in this gorgeous setting, like I wanted every one of those productions. I mean, I wanted every one of the houses that he lived in, each apartment and villa and chalet or whatever you want to call it out there in the 50s. I thought, oh my God, I want to live there. But he's not even happy with that. He's constantly changing. Oh, now I don't want to play the saxophone. Now I want to play the drums. Oh, I don't want my girlfriend Marge anymore. I want that other hot little mamacita. And I mean, how long do you think before that character wakes up and says, whoa, what's going on in my life? And for me, that's what a lot of people here in Hollywood are like. There was this dichotomy of trying to be who you are and who you want to be, but finding a sense of peace right in the middle. And that's a really hard thing to do. And I guess I resonated with that, and it just captured my heart, and I got locked into it. And even when he's killing, yeah. I couldn't help but feel sorry for him, because we don't know anything of his history. We don't know his past. We're like, where's his mom and dad? You know, what happened to Tom when he was a kid?
I know, they really don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they really don't. Sorry to interrupt you, because you're so awesome at explaining that. And it's so true what you're saying. I think that says a lot about the storytelling and also about the acting. And, you know, because I think for me as well, and I'm just a different person, you know, watching the same story, even though you're right, he was doing horrible things as the story goes on. He happens to do a few more pretty terrible things in his desperation. But you really, by the time that stuff happens, you really feel for this guy. I really did. And I think they set that up really well. And I don't know if that's just a compliment to his acting, that even in the beginning, when you don't get much information on like where's his family or what's going on with him, you just know that this guy's poor. He's definitely not in a class like these people are. And he is very quickly thrown into this world that is very enticing. I mean, it's like just ridiculous, over the top everything, right? I mean, even for me, I was watching that and I'm like, man, must be nice to be a trust kid. Jesus Christ. You know?
Right?
I'm like,
I mean,
just
who wouldn't
like,
want that?
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, no. And what is he doing? He's like flying, you know, he's sailboating around. He's playing the music. He's like already graduated from college and he's just doing whatever the hell he wants. He doesn't have to work. I mean, it does seem like the movie's really trying to show you the difference in classes, and at a time when people, you know, they were like that. And I know that still exists today on a lot of levels, but I think that time period really brings it home that there were people that were just kind of stuck where they were at, no matter how educated they were or what they did. And some people just had the opposite. And the one thing that I noticed right off the bat was that he was Matt Damon's character, the talented Mr. Ripley, was that he was smart. He was, you know, very good at like figuring out who people were, and that he had more class than most of them. Actually,
so true.
I was like, he's classier than all of these rich people, right? Like, he could actually do everything they wanted to do, but do it with like an authenticity that they didn't have. And maybe that's what makes you kind of like feel for him or even root for him in a sense, because, you know, it's rare that you want to root for the psychopath, but we kind of do in this story. And I just, you know, as it went on, I just want, you know, you keep wanting him to get away with it, I think. But let me go back, and I love what you just said about why this movie affected you. And even from my own experience, like going to school out there and living in California for as long as I did, I think it's that kind of thing where it's like, once you're in a certain atmosphere, you're drawn to something that you may not have even cared about before, you know, and you wonder with this guy, if he wasn't in that situation to start, would he have acted that way? You know, obviously it's over the top that anybody would want to take it that far and actually have to murder someone and do all these things to keep himself, you know, where he was at. But it shows you that if you spend enough time around that, you really might think, you know, like, what would you think? And I actually felt the same way that you were describing being out there in film school and wanting to be in the world of Hollywood. And like, it definitely does a number on you, and you can get lost in that a little bit. And like, what's, who am I in it? And who am I in general? And like, what am I in this whole place? And I mean, you of all people being, you know, you're still living in LA and in that area. Like, it is a different place to be in terms of like where you're placing yourself in the world. And, I think anybody in certain circumstances would start to have those kinds of feelings about that. What do you think?
Absolutely. And just because someone is talented, as the Matt Damon character was, I mean, he was talented at being an improvisationalist. He was talented at being able to play music. He was talented in learning languages, but he was also talented in being cunning and conniving and devious. And if you look at the world we live in today, and this is what, again, resonated with me, is that there are so many gorgeous looking, talented people, but the roots underneath all that could be bestowed in something so evil that you can't help but almost be attracted to it and you're drawn into it. And in the case with Tom Ripley, this is the Matt Damon character, all the people around him, even the Jude Law character, is just drawn to him because there's something mysterious about him. It's almost like we don't know about him and we don't care because he's so witty and he goes with the flow and he's got an innocent demeanor to him. And he just wants you to be, he just wants to be around you. And even as the Gwyneth Paltrow character mentioned, there's certain aspects about being with someone like the Jude Law character that they make you feel like you're the most important person in the world. That when you're there, that you light up the life in all their eyes. And for a lot of people who are struggling, actors, directors, writers, or anybody for that matter, having a little glimpse of that can shape your entire thought about, well, my life may not be bleak, may not be as sexy or sophisticated as some of those others. And wow, what can I do if I had a life like that? What would I be willing to do to have a life like that? And I think a lot of us deep, deep down inside might even question that, you know? And it was just so interesting for me to constantly peel layers of. I mean, even when he gets demonic and horrific, and it was pretty gross and graphic how they show his murderous nature. But I felt there were times where I was rooting for him and I wanted him to get away with it. And then there were times when I just thought, oh, please let morals and that sense of moral compass come in and just take him out and just, you know, but it was so hard to root for him and stay rooting for him or to be against him and stay against him. And I think maybe it's because I see people, myself included, struggle to have that idyllic life. And in the 1950s, which was the set of this film, everyone was living, if you had money, was living la dolce vita. And my God, what a life to live, right? So just
God, I was like sitting there like, please God, can I have that villa? Can I be like in that beautiful Italian? And you're right, you know, this is like a love letter to Italy, both of these movies that you picked. I feel, you know, it is kind of, yeah, and it's timely a little bit, Saj, because I know there's a lot of people suffering around the world, but like Italy really is having a really terrible experience with this,
especially
getting back to reality. And you know, this is, it made me think Italy. I was like, God, it's so crazy. And I'll tell you a personal thing. Like people that have been listening, they know I did go on this trip recently with this yoga retreat to Bali in Thailand. I got back right before all this crazy stuff started. But I was actually thinking of going to Italy instead of going there this year, because I was like, I want to go somewhere for myself. And I didn't know what to do. This opportunity came up for me to do actual work. So I went on this Bali trip and this Thailand trip that was, you know, kind of happened at the last minute. But I had been toying around with the idea of trying to figure out if I want to go and visit Italy this year or next year. And it's so weird I didn't go, but like I could have, and I could have gotten stuck there. Like, I don't know what could have happened if I decided to do something like that.
Well, thank God you didn't.
No, I can't, but I really do. I know. But it's just odd, but I do think Italy's been in my mind all year. And then you brought this this movie up, and it's just really made me, I loved watching it just because of the whole, the setting, and
setting.
Some of the places are just so beautiful.
San Remo, Roma, and the Capri. I mean, they're on these beautiful, I mean, to me, it sets the tone about what travel is, which is ultimately food for the soul. And for those that don't have the opportunity to travel, like you said, and I love that you said it was a love letter to Italy, because that's how I felt. Even though I'm watching this guy murder somebody on a boat, I'm still looking at the backdrop saying, oh my God, it's so gorgeous. Great. And he's smashing Philip Seymour Hoffman's head with this bust of a head of probably who knows what. I'm looking at the little chateau, or not little, the chateau or the villa that they're living in, and I'm thinking, oh my God, look at those curtains, look at that table, look at that fireplace, oh my God, I want to die there, you know. it was gorgeous.
Yeah, but no kidding. No, it was gorgeous. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, that's another reason to watch this movie. But this movie, I'll just bring up a second thing that I was really thinking the whole time I was watching it, which now I'm kind of, you know, I went back and I was trying to look up some stuff about it, but it really started to feel like an old classic movie, and not just because of the storyline. And, you know, it has that Hitchcock vibe where it's like, you know, this guy seems okay to start. He seems really innocent. And then obviously as the story develops, you get to notice that like there's something else going on with him. And he has this ability to do things to people that are very different, you know what I mean? Like that he can throw voices and like do impersonations of people at the drop of a hat. They definitely give you like, you know, the typical plant and payoff of some of those things where later they pay off, you know, that he's going to, you know, be able to impersonate people or do their voices and things like that. It reminded me of an old movie, and I was thinking of like film noir, you know, those old thrillers, where the stories are very similar to this, where like, you know, you don't think he's going to kill Jude's Dickie on the boat, but as the scene escalates and Dickie becomes more aggressive towards him, he reacts in such an extreme way that it just goes in that direction. At that point, it's almost accidental that happens, you know, and then you can kind of like make sense of it in your head and be like, well, you know, they were having an argument and he kind of like picked up that thing and then it was an accident. So you're kind of like, he can, you know, you don't really think it's terrible yet, but then as his character gets better at like, you know, kind of getting away with it, then you start to see a different side of Matt Damon where all these little pieces start to come together and he's doing more and more sinister things as it goes on, to the point now that he's got to really protect it the deeper he gets. The funny thing is they love to give you pieces of the story where, and this I loved, where it goes along this whole way where you just think like, this is all Matt Damon's fault in terms of like, he did this and now he's killing Philip Seymour Hoffman. But then you find out later, which was so crazy, that Dickie was violent and that like, he's very capable of killing someone. Right. And so now you're kind of like,
almost did kill somebody.
Maybe this was a good thing, you know?
Yeah. Maybe it is. Cause think about something. Yeah, I love that you brought that up. It was, I thought that I completely forgot about that, but you're absolutely right. Just because somebody looks a certain way, we can't discount them from being capable of. And perfect scenario here with the Dickie character, because not only until the very end do they disclose to us that his dad is trying to, in fact, cover up the fact that he knows of his son's rather, what shall we call it, dark side. And I mean, it was just so wonderfully woven into the storyline. And of course, the way they brought it out right at the end where we just go, aha, aha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did that a lot. And I have one small criticism of like towards the end of the movie. It felt like it ended and then it kept going. There was a moment where I was like, I thought that was the end. And then I'm like, oh, wait, it's not the end. But then as I kept with it, I was kind of like, I can see why this is now happening and this is happening, because there was so much more that needed to happen. And obviously this was based on a book. So obviously the book had a lot more going on, but in terms of like, what are your thoughts? Like, what's your favorite scene in the movie? Do you have like a couple scenes that are your favorites or just that pop up for you?
I mean, there were so many scenes. I loved the scene where she finds the rings in his apartment in Italy, and she confronts him. And that scene between the Gwyneth Paltrow character and Matt Damon, The fear on her face as she's moving further and further away from him, closer to the door. And he comes at her.
Oh my God.
And he does this shapeshift of, well, you know, I've always loved you. And he's coming at her with this creepy sort of a vibe, in this sense of wanting to tell her, well, I've always loved you, Marge, and I want you to write on a note when you go back to New York that Tom loves Marge. And instead of her accepting that this guy is trying to tell me something either loving or whatever, she's so consumed with the fact that she is absolutely certain, without a shadow of a doubt, that he had something to do with the murder, or rather the death or the disappearance of the Jude Law character. And the way he doesn't even change, and he's got a blade in his hand and it's bleeding through the robe pocket, he doesn't even shift or flinch a hair. But the skin on my hair,
yeah,
the hair on my skin rather, was just standing up, because I couldn't believe how he started to believe his own story. And it was just, it was so powerful to me. And I mean, that's one of the scenes that stood out for me. Everything and anything with Philip Seymour Hoffman, just because I'm such a fan. Every time he was on the screen, I just couldn't get my eyes off of it. I mean, they're on the boat and he's looking at him. He's like, peeping Tom, peeping Tom, peeper Tom, peeper
right?
Tom. It was so creepy. But I want to ask you, like, what did you think of the ending? Because I had questions about the ending too. Like, what did you think? Rather, when did you think the film should have ended?
I'm trying to go back and remember. Oh, man. I feel like when he got past the Philip Seymour Hoffman thing, and there was that awesome scene where he gets pulled into the police station and they're interviewing him, and he wrote that note,
yep,
which you don't know what he's doing at the time, that he leaves in, like, with the piano or whatever, and then later he gets the note handed back to him and reads it out loud in kind of shock and awe. And it's so insane how well
he's
he was
you
able
opened
to, like,
this you
foresee
this?
What was going to happen. Yeah, and then he's like, but he orchestrated all of it to the point where it just basically makes him look completely innocent, and I was just blown by that. To me, that felt like the most perfect, if you're going to look at it like a film noir, like an old classic film, where all the pieces come together, it's like the final thing that happens that, like, seals the deal, and it's over, you know? Like, he did it. He fucking did it. Like, regardless of whether you like he did it or not, but he got away, you know, he got away with it. And then it felt very much like that should have been the end, but it really was fine, because I guess there was more to it than that. But it was just, you know, to me, it felt like if they were going to end it anywhere and make it shorter, that could have been the spot, and I would have been fine with it. I would have been like, oh my God, he got away with it. Boom, it's over. You know, like, it's like he got the guy, because we didn't even get into the gay stuff, but there's, like, a whole thing that's going on with him. Where they keep, you know what I'm talking about,
oh, yeah.
Right? Where, like,
he's totally got
he's
the
obviously
feelings
super
for
in love with Jude Law. And there's, yeah. And by the way, can I just say, everyone's fucking ripped. Everyone. Like, they're all skinny. They're all, like, six packed out. I'm just like, what is going on in this movie? I could not get over it. I was like, and maybe I'm just getting old and I cannot believe it, but I'm like, look at Jude Law's body. And then I'm like, holy shit, look at Matt Damon. And I was just like, they're all ridiculously gorgeous. It's like, just the whole thing is making me insane. I mean, it was great, but it was really funny.
Dude, it was 20 years ago.
Okay. I don't know. You're right. I just, like, couldn't get over that. Yeah. And then there were just obvious scenes too, where, I mean, I think they're letting you think that early on that he's obviously more interested in Jude than he is in Gwyneth's character. If anything, he's using Gwyneth to get to Jude in a kind of weird way. And scene where they're in the bathtub, man.
I know.
And he's,
it was
he just
so
gets
erotic
out of the
and
tub
creepy.
And, like, oh my God. It's like, you know what though? Like, I felt bad for him a little bit, because, you know, it's the 50s, but there were some interesting scenes, and I kept thinking, like, now I noticed that, and that was really weird. And one thing I remembered was they went to a different location in Italy to go to this, like, you know, grungy jazz joint, right? Remember they go there?
Yep.
And it's like the first time you see Dickie is like a total douchebag. You know, he's like kissing other women. And he's obviously, you're like, this guy's doing whatever the fuck he wants. He does not care. And
you see,
and
two
that's
men.
Also what Matt Damon is starting to witness. Yeah, he's like, yeah, you see, sorry, you went right there. So they come out and you see the two guys on the street together.
Yep.
And I'm thinking like, all right, hint, hint. This is what we're supposed to think about this. Which was such a subtle thing to throw in, but obviously we all notice it. And then later you really start to see it more that he's obviously in love with Dickie. And it's not just Dickie. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, it's beyond in love with him. He's obsessed with him. And that's where
yeah, you're right.
If you look at other films, even look at Fatal Attraction, Basic Instinct, from back in those days, when people become obsessed in films such as this film, you see what lengths characters will go to obtain or appease their obsession. Because aside from being in love with the Jude Law character, who, by the way, how could you not be in love with him? The guy was drop dead gorgeous. He had almost everything any person could want, man or woman. But the Matt Damon character becomes consumed with his obsession with Dickie. And that's what was so interesting. I thought, my God, he's willing to do anything to hold on to this obsession. When anyone walks into that precious world that he's created in his own mind, i.e. the Philip Seymour Hoffman character, or even Gwyneth Paltrow, or even that girl that gets pregnant that ends up in the, she pops up in the water dead. And we wonder, did Tom do that too? But anybody who comes in and sabotages that precious world that Tom creates and jeopardizes that obsession he has, he just like takes them out. And I mean, I didn't understand why at the end he had to get rid of Jack, because isn't that the character's name, Jack, the musician, the conductor? I think it was Jack or Paul. I can't remember.
Oh, my God. I totally forgot what his... I should look that. I'm sorry. I should have made a note.
No, it's all good.
I didn't do my homework.
But I just thought that his obsession was... His obsession was just... I mean, I was obsessed with his obsession.
Yeah. And they do a lot of, like, really artistic things to show you what you're talking about. And as you were describing... it is Jack, by the way. And as you were describing him killing him on the boat in that scene.
Oh.
One thing that really stuck out, I took some notes when I was, my notes are so ridiculous because they're just silly. I just write down the weirdest shit. I wrote down, everyone's ripped. Why? And then I was like, lies about the fiance. I just write all these weird, Dickie fucks everyone. no, but one thing I did write down was, when he does kill him in the boat, he actually cuddles with him after he's dead. Do you remember that shot?
I love
it. He like spoons him dead in the boat.
Yeah. And he lays with them as they're just rocking in the water.
It's so creepy, but it's so
beautiful.
Like, you know, it's such a metaphor. Yeah. It's like, this is what he is. He's like attached to this man and he's like going to lay with him, you know, in this very bizarre way. And they do that a couple times in the movie with like these little artistic twists, but I love that. And, you know, it says a lot about like what you're talking about, which is his, you know, his real obsession with Dickie and then wanting to be Dickie, you know, and then almost, and like you said, and then believing that he is, it's like, I feel like he feels very justified because he thinks, you know, these are very rich, entitled people who are assholes, who don't have class. I think that's what he thinks. And he feels very righteous in the fact that they don't deserve what they get, you know? And I think he feels different about Jack. You're right. Because Jack just seems very different to him in general. And
but on the same token,
he shows a more authentic side of himself with Jack.
True. But on the same token, he completely killed Jack with no regard the moment Marge got into the picture, because she was bigger, better, more money, more prestigious, could probably get him further along in life. And within a matter of minutes, he makes the decision to kill Jack. And although I love the way they showed it, because we don't really see the murder, but we hear him crying as he's strangling Jack, and Jack saying, Tom is beautiful, Tom is loving, Tom is talented. And then he says, Tom is suffocating me. And you hear him escalating into his demise, whereas the Tom character just completely breaks apart and starts crying like a little boy, like a little boy. And I thought, oh my God.
Yeah, I know.
I
know. And I, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just, it was heartbreaking, but I was enthralled by it. And I couldn't help but just watch. And the way the camera shows us the Matt Damon character coming back to the room, the door sort of swinging open, and he's just looking at himself in the mirror. And I thought that was perfect. He's facing himself.
Yeah.
I just thought that was
gorgeous. And they're showing you the duality of him too. It's,
oh yeah.
Yeah. And it's symbolism. Cause I do think that for me, when I was watching that happen, that decision that he had, you know, he's made the decision that he's got to kill him now. And it's such a horrific thing for him to do, because at this point, I think we realize he's gotten comfortable killing, that it's not a big deal to him to do it. Like, if he feels justified in doing it, he'll do it. And if he feels like the people that the person he has to kill is like kind of against him anyway, he's like fine with it. But he's in love with Jack, and Jack is like his one key to having this, like, and it's such an interesting choice. In fact, I'm having this revelation as I'm saying this, is that, you know, this whole movie has been about a poor person who doesn't fit in society, who realizes with money and with power, you can have basically any life that you want. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're gay. Like, I don't think it was great being gay at that time. So I think he realizes, like, I need to have this. I need to have this money and this status. This is going to give me the life that I want. And now he's able to have this relationship with this guy, which is something he may have never foreseen happening. And in that moment, he chooses money and what all of that means over what could possibly be the love of his life, right? And that's why I think he's crying about it. And I'm thinking, like, this is so fucked, you know, because here's a person who's really having to make this crazy decision, and look what he chooses. He could have chosen to try to be honest. I think he knew if he did, he would probably be in jail. So he just was like, I have no other choice. Now I have to give up one more thing to have this. And it's the one choice he doesn't want to make at this point, because everything else is just, you know, it's just sad. And I think that's why you kind of feel twisted about it when you're watching him, and you're like, this guy's so demented. But then there's like a little bit of sadness, because you're like, you know, look how far this has gone. This poor guy, like, you know, he just took it too far in a very desperate way. And but what a great, I mean, really, it is a great story. And I feel like it brings up a lot of, like, so many themes. There was also, I'll bring up one more thing. And I know this is just, like, probably a comment to the time period that the movie takes place in. But, like, I don't know why it bothers me when you watch a movie, especially a movie that's made in the 90s, where women just seem, like, so pushed aside, right? She's like, he's the one! He did it! And the parents are like, the father's like, oh, just go take a walk, woman. They're like, you're just not feeling well. Like, it's so annoying to me. What did you feel about that?
I know. And she's looking right at them saying, I know he did it. And the father is discounting everything that Marge? That is her name, right?
Martha?
No.
Wait a minute.
Gwyneth Paltrow character, her name was Marge. So
Her name is Marge. You're right.
Yeah, her name is Marge. And the dad completely overlooks everything that she's over exaggerating on. And she's telling him there's no way he would never have taken off those rings. And what does the dad do? You know how some girls are. You know how some girls are. He just doesn't even want to accept the fact that there might be some validity to what Marge is saying. And she's trying to get the dad to say, dude, your son's missing. Are you not understanding that this is a pretty serious potential crime here? And the father doesn't even want to acknowledge it. In fact, he says, when he's describing about his son to Tom, he says to him, he gets a little, what is he? He doesn't like to be confronted. And it's exactly what the dad is the dad can't be bothered by being confronted with the son, which is probably what caused the distance between him and his son in the first place. And instead of take time to really invest and say, this is my son. I don't know where he is. I haven't seen him. He's just taking all my money. He just discounts it, and even discounts the girlfriend, and says things like, She, you know, she's just a girl. But that's what was going on at that time, Tiffers. I mean, I don't think men regarded women's thoughts or opinions as they do now. Because in the 50s, most women were just, you got married, you had babies, and then you were a grandma. And that was about it. And in this film, just...
No, I think you're right.
Completely represented that. I mean, she was an expatriate, you know, expat, and she's just living La Vida Loca and doing her thing out there in Italy with her bougie boyfriend. You know, it just didn't seem like anyone was going to listen to her. And I love that they, for me, the fact that they made her someone that no one listened to, and everyone and anyone who did listen to her, they were dead. I just thought that was very transparent for that time frame. And I'm glad that they stayed true to that.
No, I think you're right. It's just funny how much it bothers me even still, because it bothers me when I watch old movies, and it bothered me with this too. So I guess you're right. It's doing what it's supposed to. And you're right. The only person that really, I think, you know, Freddie, who was Philip Seymour Hoffman, he was the only one that believed her. And he was like the truth teller from the start, where he was able to see everything that was going on. I mean, I think that's why him coming into the movie was so much fun, because, you know, here's, it's Tom Ripley, right? I don't know why I keep like thinking of something else. Isn't his name Tom? Yes.
Yeah. Tom Ripley.
Matt Damon.
Yep.
Yeah. Tom Ripley. So Tom is already engaged in this whole thing. I'm going back into the movie a little bit, like going back to the beginning. But the second that Freddie shows up, he's kind of like, oh, really? You went to Harvard? What year did you go? Like, what? Like, who were you? Where did you stay? Like, he just right away is like, this guy is full of it, and he knows it, and he's kind of like not going to let it go. You know, he's going to toy with him the whole time until he gets the truth. And of course, he dies because of it. So
I know, you know, right?
I mean, it's a bummer.
I know. Yeah. It just, even though we're seeing all these treacherous acts, we can't help but be so invested in this character, because I think, like I was saying earlier on, there's a little bit of that in many of us, especially, again, keep in mind, I'm here in La La Land, where there's always that sense of, well, I want, you know, the grass is always greener type of a thing. And it was so emotional for me and so powerful that a movie set in the 50s, if you took out the 1950s time and put it here in 2020, I'd believe it just the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a great choice. And I do think, like, it is a movie that you can watch at any time and it will still ring true. And the acting is just really good. He's incredible in it. And he really sang that song when he sings Chet Baker and he sings My Funny Valentine.
Did he really? Oh, I wondered. I didn't think that was him. I didn't think that was him.
It is. I have some. If you go to IMDb, which I did a little bit of, they always have a trivia page. Someone just told me about this recently. And it gives you all of these like really weird facts about the film that you might not know. One of them is that he did sing that song. They both learned to play the saxophone and the piano to be in this film. What else can I tell you? They originally wanted Tom Cruise
to play. But
they saw him in Good Will Hunting, and then they decided to cast to play Tom Ripley. Yeah.
Oh no way! I didn't know. I'm so glad they went with Matt Damon. I don't know if, I mean, I'm sure Tom Cruise would have killed it, but I'm so glad they went with Matt Damon. He has such an innocent. There's an innocence to his look. Maybe it's that boy next door face, that smile, that little twinkle in his eye. I just thought he was so well cast.
Right? Oh my God, amazing. Yeah, he's so well cast. I'm trying to see if there's anything else interesting. Let me think here. There's a lot of other people. Actually, Leonardo was up for that role.
Really?
Yeah, that's what it says. Christian Bale was also considered.
Oh God.
Yeah. And this film had 4 Oscar winners, Matt Damon, Cate Blanchett, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and Gwyneth Paltrow, and Jude Law got a nominee. So this movie did amazingly well, for the time,
which rightfully is, which so
says a lot, you know, to back it up. Rightfully so. And it's Italy. I mean, what is there anything else you want to add that about this movie and just, you know, why you love it?
Again, anything in general? The Italy factor for me was huge. And I'm still a little tickled by the fact that I picked two films to consider as potentials that are based in Italy. And honestly, Tippers, I had no idea I did that until you just brought it to my attention in the beginning of our podcast. So the fact that it was set in Italy, I mean, how much more gorgeous can life be? Everything should be that good. And on top of that, I love the dichotomy of this beautiful setting, beautiful people eating beautiful food and murders going on and people questioning who they are. And I guess I'm sick and twisted. Maybe I'm fucked up in the head. I don't know. But I love.
You're not twisted. No, dude, I think Hollywood made a lot of money back in the day on just like pumping out these kinds of movies over and over again. I mean, that's the reason Hitchcock is still known to this day, because he's Hitchcock and all he did was make stories about this kind of stuff, you know, that we still watch over and over again. So yeah, obviously that's why we like it. Yeah. So a couple little more interesting facts for people, if you guys are listening and you want to know some things about this movie. So it looks like Matt Damon lost 30 pounds to play this role.
Oh, really?
Which is why he's so ripped and skinny. Good to know. That's what it says. And good to know. And one thing I did think, which I'll just give this thing a little bit of like a criticism, because it really doesn't deserve much criticism. But, you know, I thought it was funny that like everyone kept saying he looked just like Dickie after like when he changed his hairstyle a little bit and took the glasses off. It was so reminding me of like in Superman when Clark Kent like just puts his glasses on and suddenly he's Clark Kent. And then when he takes them off, he's Superman, as if it's that simple to just confuse people. And I kept thinking like, he doesn't look anything like him
at all.
He takes the glasses off and that's all he's got to do. Like at all. He doesn't look anything like him. But everybody was like so confused. Like, oh, that's Dickie. I'm like, come on. You know, that's not him. But, you know, we believe it. I think the reason I believed it also and I went along with it in this story is just because obviously back then, like, who knows if you even had a picture on your driver's license or on your identity card or whatever you used. I think it didn't matter. So, like, if you were able to, like, you know, forge some documents, you could probably just float around anywhere and say you're someone else. So, I mean, I guess that part's probably true. But, you know, anytime anybody that actually knew him saw him, he was really in for it. But man, did he navigate that pretty well. I was always surprised. I'm like, there were at least like six times in the story where I was like, he's going to get caught. He's going to get caught. Nope, nope, nope. I'm like, how the fuck did he get out of that one? That was crazy.
I know.
But,
I kept thinking
he's the talented Mr. Ripley.
He really is. I'm so with you on that. I kept thinking, that's it. He's fucked. They're going to totally catch him. And then by the sheer grace of God, he would just somehow, some way, get off the hook again. I thought for sure at the end when that detective, the American detective, called him in and the dad walks out of the room with Gwyneth Paltrow, I thought for sure he's going to get caught. Same thing with when he was in the police station. But then there he goes again, getting off. But isn't that the power of movies, Tiffers? I mean, even the way everyone's ripped and even the way how he really doesn't look like Jude Law. But then again, we're supposed to be meant to believe that he does look like Jude. I mean, that's the beauty of, what is it, movie magic?
It is. And it's, well, you know what it is? It's the sign, I think, of pretty good storytelling. Because what do you suspend your disbelief, right? So like, you're like, all right, I'll go along with it. Like, because the rest of it works so well. I think if the movie didn't work at all, then you'd definitely be like more annoyed by something like that. But because the rest of it did seem to work really well and it was such a great story, like I didn't find it to be too annoying. I just, there was a point towards the end where I was like, he doesn't look like him. Stop saying he looks like him. But it's fine. You know, it's fine. I just found one more interesting thing as I was talking to you. And I think that this is based on a book that was written by
a female.
The last name is Highsmith.
Yeah, Patricia.
Is it? Who is this written by?
I thought it was Patricia.
Is it wrong? You probably know. Yeah. Okay, everybody, I should find out. Hold on. I want to know the information. You're right, Patricia Highsmith. Okay, yep. So Patricia Highsmith
She wrote the book.
The novel, and I guess she wrote, yeah, and there's also like a couple follow-up books to this, apparently. But one interesting thing that I just found through, I think from the Roger Ebert site, is that Highsmith wrote The Talent of Mr. Ripley 5 years after writing Strangers on a Train, which Hitchcock made into a film. So there's like an odd connection to, because they're connecting this movie to Strangers on a Train, because it has a similar, it's not a similar story at all, but there's definitely a
that film noir
vibe,
which was so,
yeah. And also, no, go ahead.
Well, you know, as we know, it's that cinematic term that we use when we talk about films of the 40s and 50s that's that classic period of American film noir. And it depicts that sort of a cynical, almost that attitude and that almost sexual motivation, which that's what film noir is. And this film, along with Strangers on a Train, of course, Alfred Hitchcock, the greatest, the grandfather of noir himself. And I think if I'm not mistaken, Minghella said that he wanted to do a little odd to Hitchcock, and this was his odd to him by making The Talented Mr. Ripley.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the reason Strangers, it's funny because I hadn't seen it. I don't think I'd seen it ever. And I had a guest, Amy O'Brien. I'm shouting out to Amy. She picked Strangers on a Train. She's a big fan of these kind of movies. Go, Amy! And I didn't realize there was the similar storyline of a man obsessed with another man. And that's exactly part of the storyline in Strangers on a Train, because it's also about you should rewatch that movie. It's actually a fun one to watch because it's about the idea of like switching murders. You know, it's like you murder this one for me and I'll murder this one for you, and just like we'll take care of it for each other. And but really it's about a guy who's kind of obsessed with the other guy and a bunch of other stuff. But it's not, like I said, it's not the same story at all, but you can see how the writer of that wrote this. And I wonder if she's interested in that whole thing with like men being obsessed with each other, or like, it makes me curious, like, because those to have both of those things show up twice in her writing, it's kind of interesting, right? I'm like, what is it with her that she would think about that again? I'd love to ask you, Patricia, where are you?
I know. Let's
talk
Patricia.
About it.
I know.
Yeah, I know, right? I'll shout out. Patricia, where are you?
Come on down.
God, I don't know. Oh, you know what?
What?
Is she alive?
I don't know.
She's dead.
Is she? May you rest, Patricia. Perhaps we can do
a
Ouija, what is it, a telepathic seance of sorts, and we can channel her on a future podcast.
Oh my God, yes. We got to get a medium in here, and then we'll do a talk with her. No, sadly, Patricia died in 1995 at the age of 74.
May you rest,
Patricia. But that's okay. Hey man, you wrote an awesome story, so we're all appreciating it. All right, Saj. Well, listen, I'm trying to think if I have anything else to ask you. Maybe what we can do, if your game is, I'll take a look at the Tuscan Sun, Under the Tuscan Sun, and we'll continue our love affair with Italy. If you want to try and do this again in the next couple weeks or whenever you have free time.
Well, considering I'm
in
quarantine,
I can't wait.
Me too. You kidding me? Hit me.
Yeah.
Up.
Well,
this was so fun.
Let me go ahead.
Oh, this was so fun, and considering
awesome. I love having you on.
You're awesome, and we're in quarantine, so sooner rather than later, let's get this dialogue going and share with others our love and the way we feel about our passions in film and cinema.
No, totally. And let me ask, do you have anything to recommend? Like, let's talk about current movies just to go out on a recommendation. People are stuck at home. They're flicking on their, you know, they're turning on their tubes. They're looking on all the all the different platforms. They even have some movies that are out in the theaters that you can rent online now because you can't go to the movie theater right now. So what is it? Do you have any suggestions of something maybe you just saw or something that you heard about that everyone should go check out?
I really appreciated Jojo the Rabbit. I thought that movie was so beautiful. And even though it's depicting a time of war and just devastating scenery as far as people dying in masses, the undertone set by the tone of this beautiful young boy, in fact, it's his POV. It was just so gorgeous. I couldn't help but be, I just wanted to hug that movie all the way through. So Jojo the Rabbit was a film And I got one of the screeners, so I was watching it over and over again, and I thought it was just amazing. I'm doing a lot of TV. I'm watching a lot of TV these days, and I have to do a definite shout out to any of my peeps on HBO for Westworld, because I am obsessed.
Thank you.
So obsessed with Westworld.
Dude, I am so obsessed.
Season 3, I'm dying right now. I'm just dying. It's so damn good. It's super delicious. The scenery, the cinematography, of course, the acting, the storyline, better and better. And it couldn't have come at a better time, especially with us being stuck at home. And if you want a little relief,
If
you're wanting a little relief, comedically speaking, I'm going to stick to my diehard true Frankie and Grace on Netflix, because those chicks have it going on. And this might be the last season, and it's hilarious. It's super funny. You want to pour a glass of wine, get a little hit of weed, whatever you want to do, and just have a romp and a riot of just laughing your ass off with some pretty authentic storylines attached to the comedic therapy.
That's awesome. You know, it's really funny that you said that, because we literally have been watching a lot of like 80s movies with the girls. And last night we just put on 9 to 5, just ran. And we're like, we're just going to watch 9 to 5. And, I was like, holy shit, Lily Tomlin and Jane
Fonda.
And then the girls were like, you know, yeah. And I'm like, dude, they're still around. And I was like, and Stella was like, oh my God, Grace and Frankie. I'm like, that's them. I'm like, can you believe this is 9 to 5? And this is like how many years later these two people are still acting together? Like, how fucking awesome is that? And by the way, you just like, and I haven't even really watched that show. I think I watched the first season, but I need to go back to it. But Westworld is like my obsession as well.
Yay.
And I want to plug that in addition after you just said that. I think it's one of the smartest shows on television. And it's just so well done. I mean, and everybody looks at it and they just say like, oh, sci-fi. I'm like, this is not real. I mean, it's sci-fi, but it's not.
It's like drama.
Such an awesome show. It is so good. And I fucking love Maeve, man. I just love her. I just want her to like do everything.
Oh, she's going to take out take out Dolores. And I love that they brought Aaron Paul in. And I'm so happy that Ed Harris is still he's slated on. But Maeve, she's going to rule the world. And I think at the end,
we'll have to just keep talking about that too.
Are you kidding me? Anytime you want, I'm going to talk Westworld till I'm blue in the face.
I love you, dude. Oh my God. Awesome. All right. Well, listen, Saj, this is such a pleasure. And hopefully, right guys, I'll have her back and you can listen to another episode. And if you hope you're enjoying the quarantine, maybe you're hating the quarantine. Listen, if you love movies, which is what this thing's about, plenty of time to watch movies. So please do that. You know, enjoy it. And I'll have another episode for you guys next week. Thanks again, Saj.
You are so welcome. It was my pleasure. I love talking films with you. So anytime, we'll do this again. Thank you, Tiffers.
All right. Peace, everybody. Have a great one.